more recently. Mirror Myths, where is it shown that prosperity comes from the accumulated wealth of the rich? Why not see that development and wealth are products of humanity based on the accumulated experience and knowledge of the millenary human history? Another dogma of today's world lies in a misreading of Adam Smith himself, according to whom all social progress is based on the ambition and selfishness of the individual. Hence the social myth according to which progress and prosperity are based on the ambition of individuals to be millionaires, which is why there is no need to punish success with taxes. A popular but cheap myth. If we consider that all the progress, all or almost all the technical, scientific, and social inventions recorded in history, even in the capitalist age, have been made by people who were not thinking about the money. And social myths do not come from the people. They come from power. Yes, the Industrial Revolution multiplied wealth and inequality a hundredfold, but you can't separate three elements of brutal Euro-American imperialism. If South America had plundered the rest of the world for centuries, today it would be a model of progress and development. The fact that today the poor are less poor than yesterday is not proof of the benefits of capitalism. Since humanity has been making progress for millennia, and all at an accelerated rate, no technical or scientific progress is not due to capitalism or the capitalists. The millionaires just kidnap them. The current corporate capitalism is a legacy of the slave system. In the name of freedom, the exploitation of those below, the concentration of wealth, the sacralization of the master's entrepreneurs, and the demonization of the workers' slaves. At this moment, capitalism is bringing nothing but existential problems, such as the destruction of the planet by dint of growth based on consumption and destruction and aggravation of social differences, which will lead to greater conflicts. Capitalism is exhausted, and the crisis lies in denying the socialization of human progress, which will be inevitable after the breakdown with massive robotization and development of AI. To suggest that the problem of inequality be solved with handouts is like fighting an infection with aspirin. Instead of being cured, the infection increases. The breakdown could be avoided by global agreement, but if sanity were not a rare commodity, we would not be drowning in an environmental crisis now. The alternative is a global collapse, a dystopian situation where all the laws accepted today as dogmas, such as the value of the dollar and of private property, are broken. A collapse where there are no winners, but a definitive regression to the Middle Ages. If in a town there were kids dying of hunger and someone happened to light a cigarette with $100 bill, it would be described as immoral. Well, that's the situation today. That is to say that we are in the first level of three. Number one, moral. It is immoral that children die of hunger in a super rich and hyper technological world. Basic needs covered would be the first step of a humanistic civilization. Number two, injustice. Then there would be the discussion of the injustice of what falls to each one and based on what reason. And number three, convenience. A less relevant discussion is about the necessity or convenience of inequity. For many of Americans, equity favors development and even the production of wealth. Growth as a precondition for any redistribution is a dogma created by power. The super rich are the enemies of humanity. Not only do they kidnap wealth from the rest, they do not only monopolize politics in democracies and dictatorships, but they keep them in a state of hypnosis through the great propaganda media, the media of distraction, toxic fun, and fragmentary, and by virtue of keeping millions of other humans in a state of need, as wage slaves with no time to think that their brothers and neighbors are not the pirates. But a large part of humanity loves, admires, and desires the super rich, as the slaves love the masters who threw a potion at them at the end of an exhausting day. The master and the potion were received as a blessing, and the rebels as the demons who wanted to turn the world upside down.
It's the show where we discuss the most topical of topics, the most controversial of controversies, and the most important affairs of affairs.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners, sisters and brothers. This is Asma, and I have the privilege to be your host for today's discussion. Well, here with me, I have two very dear and credible guests, Sister Zainab and Brother Muzaffar. It's been so long since the last time I met you two, and today I am over pleased to have you both in one picture. Okay, ladies, first I will start with you, Sister Zainab. Assalamu alaikum, and how are you doing?
Assalam. Thank you so much.
I'm glad.
Doing great, alhamdulillah.
Thank God.
Totally psyched to be here with you guys.
So pleasure to be with you. And you, brother, assalamu alaikum, and how's life?
Wa alaikum salam. Life is good, alhamdulillah. And I'm here after such a long time. And
yes,
it's great to be back.
Great to be with you.
Thanks
too.
Thanks for having me.
So, just as the ritual of this program, I would love you two to give me a very short introduction about yourself. And let's start with you, Brother Muzaffar.
Yeah, so I'm Muzaffar Haider. Mm-hmm. I'm born and raised in the UK. I'm studying in the Hausa, and now I occasionally show up at IRIB English Radio and discuss some interesting topics with you.
Topics.
Of course. And you, sister?
I'm Zainab. I'm a student of philosophy.
Well, in today's discussion, we will start with a quotation from Martin Luther King that says, "Our lives begin to end the day we become silent about things that matter." And I would love to know your reactions towards this quotation.
I find a great amount of truth in that. You know, I believe it was
What
him.
Does it mean?
Well, there's no point in living anymore if you're not talking about the things
if
that
If you're not complaining
really
anymore.
No. There's a big difference. See, he's talking about being silent. In his perspective, you know, he was talking about being silent
oppression.
In the face of oppression, in the face of white supremacy, etc. You know, for example, he also said that injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere.
Yeah.
This is another quote of his that I really appreciate, and it's something that we can use.
Said that thing about dreams, remember?
I have a dream.
Yeah, I have a dream. So now,
what matters?
Justice matters.
Justice matters, okay? If you're not talking about justice anymore, why live? If your life has ended already because you're not living, you see?
Mm-hmm.
Man, that is a really revolutionary statement.
Yeah.
If you think
about it. In our social life also, this quotation would work so great.
Okay, now even if you bring this to a relationship,
yes,
right? A husband and wife,
mm-hmm,
they have issues with each other. They're having problems. They stop talking about those problems.
Yeah.
It's as if the relationship is dead.
Yeah.
You're not talking about them. You're not mm-hmm trying to solve them anymore.
Yeah, and then what happens is that the problems would pile up and one day they would explode.
Mm-hmm.
And there would be a burst of that.
Mm, yeah. See you in the courtroom.
Yeah. That's very true. And then there, I would tell you every single thing. So now another thing would happen, see, as a student at a school, if they do not speak of their own self, then they would be oppressed all the time. But they would be bullied by their friends, or they would not achieve whatever right they have from the teacher or their educational system. That also would happen there as well.
You got to talk about the things that matter. If you're not talking about the things that matter, mm-hmm. it's as if you're not living. I said that already, but I mean, look at this context which you've just brought. I mean, look how powerful that is.
But what happens to a person when they stop talking? Sister Zainab, I would love to hear your idea.
What happens to a person when they stop talking?
What we go through...
About things that matter.
About things that matter. Thank you for that specification.
Because people are talking all the time, but they're not talking about things that matter.
Otherwise, it would be complaining. And there's no use over it.
They end up talking about things that don't matter, and then values shift.
Damn.
People don't talk about the fact that there's injustice. We can see this very prevalent, especially in the Western society, when the youth were stripped of important, actual important, logical, fate-determining topics. They ended up obsessing about less important things. Their focus shifted onto anti-values.
So they don't talk about things that matter because they've been too preoccupied with things
that
are
didn't
trivial.
Matter. Yeah. No. The things that mattered were taken away from them. And like Brother Muzaffar said, you got to talk about something as a species. That's the talking is the way we express ourselves. It's the way we communicate. It's the way we convey information. It's the way we bond. It's the way we create change.
Mm-hmm.
It's the way we fortify or we defend or we establish values and thoughts and ideas and ideologies and so on and so forth. So talking isn't...
So the values have been shifted
because
give an example, right? They're not talking about like drugs on the streets. They're not talking about racism in society. They're seeing that, for example, in Palestine, your government is dropping bombs on innocent children, right? Okay. Instead of talking about that, let's talk about my individuality, right? Let's talk about how I have the freedom to choose my own gender. Yes, that's what we're going to talk about. And then they start talking about how everyone has the right.
Exactly. And then the values are shifted.
And what do they have the right to do? Get married to somebody of the same gender, for example, LGBT. The shift in the values has taken place.
It's very
because
important.
They're not talking about the things that are actually valuable.
Exactly. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah, that's it.
So the shift in values is one of the reasons that why we stop talking about things that matters.
And no. We stop talking about things that matter and then the shift in value occurred.
That's true. Let's go for a little break. We'll be back in no time. Dear audience, stay with us.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Back to Reality.
So, welcome back to your audience. This is IRIB English Radio. We are having a discussion in your Back to Reality. If we come to everyday life, I would say sometimes you don't see any effect after what you're talking. You know, there's no outcome.
Maybe you're not talking to the right people.
As you just said, when there is a shift in values, then no one is going to understand what you actually are after. You know what I mean? I mean, I would make an example in order to clarify it more. For example, I talk about morality, and people in my society no longer care for morality. So whatever I'm going to say, whatever recommendation I would give them, or whatever thing that is important that I am bringing into light, they would not put any emphasis on it. They would think like it's something trivial and it's of no importance, and they would just
Look at me, okay, just like so I'm an ignorant. Thing.
But at least you're alive, right? At least you're talking about
it. Yeah, at least you're standing up for something. You know that quote? I don't know who, I'm pretty sure it's not from Martin Luther King.
I think it was me, but yeah, go on.
Yeah, yeah. If you don't stand for something, you'll fall for anything.
It's yeah, Shahid Malcolm.
There we go. I'm so bad with names.
Yeah, the concept
right?
is very important.
Yeah, exactly. So at least you're talking about it. Mm. I mean, Imam Khomeini was talking about how America is the great devil on his own for such a long time until people, you know, turned around and took notice. And he was like, maybe this old Sayyid is right. Yeah. Maybe he knows what he's talking
about.
But
you'll get tired, you know?
Oh, no, that's the thing. You got to have that integrity.
Persistence is very important, but you have
after
to have
so long
integrity.
When you see
there is nothing coming out of what you're saying.
No, you don't get tired. Mm. You don't get tired because a person who is speaking out the things which matter, like pointing out that America is like the root of evil in the world, etc., and oppression. If
I guess
you have to say it again. Yeah, like, for example, pointing out that America is the great Satan. When you're pointing out oppression, when you're standing for justice, if you do it with the right intentions, it's not something that tires you out. You might get physically tired, but it actually becomes a part of you and you just cannot envision your life in any other way. Even if you are feeling the pains of people rejecting the message, of being attacked by the enemies, even then you just can't change the way you are. And on the other end of the spectrum, there'll be people who talk blah, 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 blah about random stuff that doesn't really matter, like those for whom the values have shifted. They also can't change the way that they've become. They just have to be like that. They have to be talking about non-issues. I wanted to actually bring up another point here. There's a lot of people whose kind of dream in life, their career path, is to do with talking, right? So you could be a scholar, you could be a kind of a celebrity, a game show host, a talk show host rather, a radio personality, right? It goes on and on and on, right? Your whole job, your career, your life choice is about talking. If you don't talk about the things that matter, it's as if your career is dead from the beginning. Now, I'm not saying that that means that you might not get famous or you might not get rich. You might get rich and famous through talking about non-issues, but you're dead. You're dead before you even began.
You are not aware of it, but you're dead.
Yeah, and that's what you see. So many celebrities, they become rich and they become famous, and eventually big issues are happening in the world which become bigger than they are. And then in order to stay in the limelight, they suddenly throw an opinion out there so that people will notice them.
Yeah.
And everybody just ridicules their opinion.
No, because they don't know what they're talking about.
You don't know what you're talking about. You're just saying that so that you can stay in the limelight, so that you can
stay relevant
and famous. And it's so noticeable when that happens that that person at that moment realizes, I'm actually a dead person. I don't matter. I've got all this money. I've got all this fame. Nobody cares about me. I can't make a change.
Sucks.
If you can't make a change, like, what's your value in this world? I believe it's a Christian saying that, you know, what is a man except one who tries to make a good change, a positive change in the world?
I thought that was Frank Sinatra.
Oh, really? No, because I saw it from Kingdom of Heaven, the movie.
Okay.
It was on a Latin placard. Okay, now coming
to... So after all, a person without a school of thought is nothing, is dead.
Yeah, you're not... It goes back to what Sister Zainab said about, you know, if you're not standing for something, you'll fall for anything. There's no point in your existence. Now, I wanted to bring this to us in the Islamic world, especially those who are wanting to do public speaking, and their entire kind of life's direction is to have an impact on the society through talk, through lectures, through radio, through however, but it's about talking. You're not going to be successful unless you talk about the things that matter. You go up onto the pulpit, you go up onto the stage, onto the minbar, and you're just talking about non-issues. Nobody cares about them. You're entirely avoiding the issues that are on the ground actually affecting people in the societies. If you're not willing to step out there and talk about those matters that really do matter, there's no point. It's as if you're dead to start with.
Yeah, so I get what you mean. Yeah, that was very interesting. So, dear listeners, you were listening to IRB English Radio, and this was Back to Reality. This is all the time that we got for today's discussion. I hope you enjoyed it. May Allah protect you.
Ya Allah, Ya Rabb al-Alamin, Ya Rahman, Ya Rahim, Ya Rabbi, let the Ummah rise again. Ya Allah, يا رب العالمين يا رحمن يا رحيم يا ربي let the ummah rise again let us see daylight again once again
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran.
The wildfires in Greece, Turkey, the United States.
Palestinian prisoners in Israeli jails continue to engage in hunger strikes.
Kim Yo-jong, the powerful sister of North Korean leader...
On the news line.
As the underpinnings of many Western countries are being called into question, China is holding out both its political and economic model as a thriving alternative. Over the past four decades, Beijing has increasingly asserted its power on the global stage and is now on course to become the world's biggest economy even sooner than predicted pre-pandemic. But now, as the world undergoes changes unseen in decades, China alongside Russia seem to be embroiled in a battle with the West both in terms of economies and military might, a battle which the West seems to be on the losing side. Amid simmering tensions between the two sides, the former British Prime Minister says the Ukraine war is an indication of the West's diminishing dominance. Tony Blair stated that the West's dominance is coming to an end as China rises to superpower status in partnership with Russia at one of the most significant inflection points in centuries.
The collective West needs to take into account now is that they are not alone. They need to stop their imperialistic way of approaching how they see the world. They tend to say, well, the global... worlds, and but when they say the global world, they only mean maybe 15% of the population. But the problem now is that they don't have the weight they used to have, and they need to take into account that you have an emerging world, and we are living the last days of the imperialistic West.
From trade wars against China to sanctions on many countries including Russia, Iran and Venezuela, the West has in the past decade went on a rampage against any nation not willing to play by its rules. But now the West's risky games have backfired and signs of distress are multiplying with falling currency valuation, social crisis, inflation, poverty and much more. Those coercive measures also, however, push targeted nations closer to each other, setting the foundations of a multilateral world. In the 1960s, while the US was putting a man on the moon, China was struggling to feed its 1 billion people during the decade-long Cultural Revolution. The US was enjoying a favorable economic environment And China, on the other hand, was faced with a completely stagnant and ruined economy coupled with widespread famine. But nearly two decades later, in light of vast economic reforms, China opened up to private businesses and foreign investment. Dominant state-owned bank turned savings into financing tools for roads, rail links, and ports, all this while foreign firms were forced to set up alongside a local partner, encouraging the transfer of technology. As a result, the economy grew 90-fold over the next four decades. But history clearly shows that plagues and wars are things that either cause the downfalls of particular order or cause a rethink. So when these disasters arise, a void is created waiting to be filled by a superior nation or nations.
I think it's not about, you know, either one pole or the other. You know, we might enter into a bipolar world or ideally a multipolar world. It doesn't mean that it's going to be a complete downfall. You know, the world needs the West. It's not about either or. It is about how we can live together. But if the West keeps on going into this direction, it might be a downfall, especially when you look at the economy. How are they going to manage when the dollar is not going to be the global currency? Now the dollar being a global currency makes the U.S., gives the U.S. this power to print endless paper, which is backed by nothing. So that, if we talk about downfall, well, we might have an economic downfall, because the day that the dollar is no more the global currency, hegemonic currency, then you then will experience hyperinflation, and it could be extremely dramatic.
In the past couple of years, not only China, but several sovereign nations, including Russia and Iran, demonstrated the power which can be gained through sovereignty. And countries relying on the West, on the other hand, presented an example of the problems that could arise upon relying on others. From the formation of new allegiances such as the BRICS or the G20, to a shift away from a unipolar world and dependency on the US, all signs indicate a shift in global order towards a multilateral world. Gas supplies to Europe have tightened and fuel costs have soared since Russia's conflict with Ukraine in February and subsequent sanctions, leaving countries scrambling to refill storage and diversify supply channels. But despite the heavy costs incurred by their citizens, the Russophobia sentiment by many EU countries, especially those with close ties with the US, continues unabated. The Netherlands, Germany, Poland, and Italy are just some of the European countries who are buyers of Russian oil. But now the EU seems to have imposed sanctions on Moscow without having a plan for life without cheap Russian energy. A clear example of sanctions backfiring would be Germany, which recently reported its first trade deficit in 30 years. While the sanctions on Russia were meant to pressure Moscow in light of its special operation in Ukraine, the backfiring of the EU measures have given birth to disagreements between politicians in the bloc. The Hungarian Prime Minister has said that a failure in rolling back the sanctions on Russia risks the destruction of the European economy. Viktor Orban said European leaders should reconsider their strategy, as sanctions have caused widespread damage to the European economy without weakening Russia or bringing the months-long war closer to any resolution.
Absolutely. I think that the Hungarian leader, Viktor Orban, right now is saying what is meant to be unsaid and unspoken, is that basically the sanctions, this pressure campaign from the European Union against Russia because of Russia's special military operation in Ukraine is having a blowback, as the CIA used to put the term, in that the sanctions are actually working against the European economy. And what Orban was addressing was the fuel crisis that exists right now, compounded with the inflation that we see around the world. We're looking at fuel prices increasing, fuel shortages, and issues with fuel supply and logistics to get that fuel to the European market and to many of the nations. Remember that Hungary is landlocked, so it imports most of its oil via pipeline. And so right now we are witnessing a pretty catastrophic next few months and what some people are predicting to be a very tough winter for Europe.
In 2021, the EU imported around 155 billion cubic meters of natural gas from Russia. The bloc's proposed gas replacements by the end of 2022, which included LNG diversification, renewables, heating efficiency, pipeline diversification, biomethane, solar rooftops, and heat pumps, however, only amount to around 102 BCM annually. The European Commission and member states' efforts to diversify away from Russian fossil fuels were also clearly demonstrated in a memorandum of understanding with Egypt and Israel for LNG exports from the East Mediterranean. However, analysts predicted that there could be significant cost implications for Europe as it looks elsewhere for gas supplies. The International Monetary Fund even indicated that escalations to existing sanctions against Russia could cascade into even steeper energy price increases, deteriorating corporate and household sentiment and financial market disruption.
The European leaders don't really care about their people, and they don't really care about peace. They are interested in serving the military-industrial complex. They're interested, as members of the ruling class, in serving the lapdogs, you know, in Washington, in Brussels, in Vienna. And so they don't really care, ultimately, about peace and stability. Ukraine here is like a sacrificial lamb for the European leaders by which to pump in more weapons. Germany is rearming itself. NATO is going to increase its weapons. And we see, not only in Europe now, but everywhere, sanctions affect the poorest people. They affect the population. They don't as necessarily affect the leaders.
Spiraling inflation has been eating into the salaries of lower-income Europeans, and this has triggered protests and strikes across the continent over the rising cost of living. From railway workers to pilots, people from all walks of life dissatisfied with the situation have in one way or another expressed their concerns. Now, farmers in Spain have also joined the mass European protests seen in Italy, Poland, and the Netherlands. The farmers' protests seen in Spain, Poland, and Italy come after strikes in the Netherlands have led to many supermarkets running out of food as the anti-government movement continues. The rising cost of fuel has also been a contributing factor to the protests. Gas supplies to Europe have tightened and fuel costs have soared since Russia's conflict with Ukraine in February and subsequent sanctions, leaving countries scrambling to refill storage and diversify supply channels. But despite the heavy costs incurred by their citizens, the Russophobia sentiment by many EU countries, especially those with close ties with the US, continues unabated. The Netherlands, Germany, Poland, and Italy are just some of the European countries who are buyers of Russian oil. But now the EU seems to have imposed sanctions on Moscow without having a plan for life without cheap Russian energy. A clear example of sanctions backfiring would be Germany, which recently reported its first trade deficit in 30 years. While the sanctions on Russia were meant to pressure Moscow in light of its special operation in Ukraine, the backfiring of the EU measures have given birth to disagreements between politicians and the bloc. The Hungarian Prime Minister has said that a failure in rolling back the sanctions on Russia risks the destruction of the European economy. Viktor Orban said European leaders should reconsider their strategy, as sanctions have caused widespread damage to the European economy without weakening Russia or bringing the months-long war closer to any resolution.
Absolutely. I think that the Hungarian leader, Viktor Orban, right now is saying what is meant to be unsaid and unspoken, is that basically the sanctions, this pressure campaign from the European Union against Russia because of Russia's special military operation in Ukraine is having a blowback, as the CIA used to put the term, in that the sanctions are actually working against the European economy. And what Orban was addressing was the fuel crisis that exists right now. compounded with the inflation that we see around the world. We're looking at fuel prices increasing, fuel shortages, and issues with fuel supply and logistics to get that fuel to the European market and to many of the nations. Remember that Hungary is landlocked, so it imports most of its oil via pipeline. And so right now we are witnessing a pretty catastrophic next few months and what some people are predicting to be a very tough winter for Europe.
In 2021, the EU imported around 155 billion cubic meters of natural gas from Russia. The bloc's proposed gas replacements by the end of 2022, which included LNG diversification, renewables, heating efficiency, pipeline diversification, biomethane, solar rooftops, and heat pumps, however, only amount to around 102 BCM annually. The European Commission and member states' efforts to diversify away from Russian fossil fuels were also clearly demonstrated in a memorandum of understanding with Egypt and Israel for LNG exports from the East Mediterranean. However, analysts predicted that there could be significant cost implications for Europe as it looks elsewhere for gas supplies. The International Monetary Fund even indicated that escalations to existing sanctions against Russia could cascade into even steeper energy price increases, deteriorating corporate and household sentiment and financial market disruption.
The European leaders don't really care about their people, and they don't really care about peace. They are interested in serving the military-industrial complex. They're interested, as members of the ruling class, in serving the lapdogs, you know, in Washington, in Brussels, in Vienna. And so they don't really care, ultimately, about peace and stability. Ukraine here is like a sacrificial lamb for the European leaders by which to pump in more weapons. Germany is rearming itself. NATO is going to increase its weapons. And we see, not only in Europe now, but everywhere, sanctions affect the poorest people. They affect the population. They don't as necessarily affect the leaders.
Spiraling inflation has been eating into the salaries of lower-income Europeans, and this has triggered protests and strikes across the continent over the rising cost of living. From railway workers to pilots, people from all walks of life dissatisfied with the situation have in one way or another expressed their concerns. Now, farmers in Spain have also joined the mass European protests seen in Italy, Poland, and the Netherlands. The farmers' protests seen in Spain, Poland, and Italy come after strikes in the Netherlands have led to many supermarkets running out of food as the anti-government movement continues. The rising cost of fuel has also been a contributing factor to the protests.
U.S. President Joe Biden and Israeli Prime Minister Yair Lapid have reiterated their anti-Iran positions in a joint declaration. The two leaders signed this statement after holding a one-on-one meeting on Thursday morning in occupied territories, on the second day of Biden's four-day tour of West Asia. The statement says that the U.S. will use all elements of national power available to it to deny Iran the ability to arm itself with nuclear weapons. The joint declaration also includes a pledge by Washington to continue U.S. military aid to Israel. Hours after the announcement of the declaration, Iranian President Ebrahim Raisi warned of harsh and regrettable responses, saying any interventions of foreign powers in the region only results in crises and destabilization, while describing Iran's military power as a security factor. Observers believe that the unconditional support of the U.S. for Israel as the only regime that openly threatens Iran with military aggression can further embolden Tel Aviv.
I don't think that Biden's visit to the Middle East has really anything to do about with arms sales. I think that essentially he's come first and foremost to try to get the Saudis to push up oil production to try to bring down prices at the gas pumps in the United States as Biden moves toward November 5th midterm elections for Congress and the Senate, where right now he's expected not to do too well. What I think this stems from is Israel's push to try to get the United States thinking somehow that they're going to intimidate Iran, which is ludicrous. That's not going to happen.
U.S. President's visit to the region comes as Washington and Israel have been pushing for an alliance of regional countries against Iran, the so-called Arab NATO. At the heart of such military alliance lies the perceived threat from Iran. Iranian officials have repeatedly denounced the destabilizing activities of Israel as the main source of insecurity in the region, warning regional countries of the perils of allowing the regime to establish a foothold in the region. Regional states and nations will not achieve stability and peace as long as the fake Israeli regime remains the first stop of U.S. President's trips, with the main target being to preserve the regime's security and dominance. The Islamic Republic of Iran considers the security of its neighbors as its own security. Despite the growing relations between Israel and the Persian Gulf countries amid gradual American withdrawal from the region, several observers consider the emergence of a genuine NATO-style alliance unlikely.
You understand how much more powerful Iran has become in the region precisely because of its alliance with China and Russia. And so if you look at the offshoot of this, is that any threat to Iran also becomes a threat to Russia. Now, Israel, people in Tel Aviv, they understand this. They understand that there's been a shift in the balance of power in the region, and this frightens them. The reaction has been the attempt to build some sort of Middle East NATO, and that's not going to fly. It's not going to fly any more than the talk of European unity. That doesn't exist vis-a-vis Russia. It's just a contrived narrative.
A number of controversial questions are being posed by those analyzing Biden's visit and the so-called Arab NATO. The first question is whether the Arab states need such an alliance. Is the existing joint Arab defense framework so useless that it must be replaced by this new regional NATO? Second, the pact expects to be formed against Iran, but there are differing views on Iran's policies in the region. To include Israel, an occupier of Arab lands, in a new framework against Iran would only exacerbate the regional crises. In fact, a number of Arab officials have openly said in the past few days that their countries would not be a part of an alliance against Iran. And last but not least, not every country has normalized relations with Israel to form a common pact.
اقرأ باسم ربك الذي خلق.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. يا أيها المزمل قم الليل إلا قليلا نصفه
أو انقص منه قليلا أو زد عليه ورتل القرآن ترتيلا.
قد دعوتك ربي بقرآني جنبني حراني.
Let's recite the Quran.
ناجيتك أرجو غفرانك يا من ينجينا إحسانه ودعوتك ربي بقرآني.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين وصلى الله على محمد وآله الطاهرين.
اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد وأجل فرجهم.
Thank you so much for joining us again. Alhamdulillah, we finished the rule إظهار, إدغام and إخفاء. So one more rule is left, which is
إقلاب.
هذا النور شفاء صدور فاض وعطر كل لسان وهنا حلقات الصديق قلب ينبض بالقرآن وهنا حلقات الصديق قلب ينبض بالقرآن.
So إخفاء was to hide, إدغام was to merge, and إظهار was
nothing.
To do nothing. But Iqlab is to
Change.
So there was a sentence. Change, merge, hide, nothing. Hide, merge, and change?
Nothing.
Okay? Now we are going to change. But nothing, we delete this one, okay? We change something, okay? So now let's go to the rule, iqlab. Alhamdulillah, it's easy. Don't worry, okay? Don't worry, it's easy. Iqlab means to change, right? Iqlab yes. means to change. But what should we change to what? What should we change and what should we change it to? So, iqlab tells you that you change because we're talking about nun, sakin, and tanween. So whatever we do here, okay, with these four rules, okay, we're applying all these four rules on nun, sakin, or tanween. So iqlab means you change that nun sound, either it is a nun, sakin, or tanween producing that nun sound, okay? You change this nun sound to a hidden meme.
Yes.
Meme. When you say meme, your lips touch one another, okay? Meme. But hidden meme is that you produce the sound meme, but your lips do not touch. Do not completely touch one another. Meow, meow, meow. Look, there is a little space, okay? There has to be a little space between your lips. For example, if you take a tissue or a paper, okay, a four paper, whatever, okay, you put between your lips, okay, the paper fits there, okay? It means it does not let your lips touch. This way, okay? Just there has to be a little space between your lips, okay? That's called iqlab. This is how we apply the rule iqlab, okay? So we change that noon sound to a hidden or a half meme. Half meme, okay? A half meme with a nasal sound. Okay? And also how we should prolong it or no? Yeah, for two counts you have to prolong it, okay? Mew, 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 two counts, okay? Mew, mew, that's right. Okay? So, now it becomes more clear when we go to examples, okay? So, listen to this example. Min baini. Min baini. So, iqlab was applied when the tanween or nun sakin approaches what letter?
Ba.
The letter ba. Min baini. Nun sakin plus?
Ba.
Ba. Min baini. So, do we apply the rule iqlab here or no?
Yes.
Okay, how should we apply? For what?
We turn the noon sound into a small meme sound.
A half meme sound. Okay, go on. How do we?
Mimbaini.
That's correct. Mimbaini. But a gunna as well has to be there. Yes, gunna means a nasal sound.
Yes.
Mimbaini. 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 If you say mimbaini, that's wrong. Because it changes to another word.
Yes.
You don't have to change the word. We kind of bring some changes, but not a complete change. We do not completely change the noon to a meme. Okay? Mimbaini. No. Mimbaini. Okay? Yes, Ali Nasir?
This iqlab, every time when the noon sakin or tanween reaches to ba, we will apply this rule?
Yeah, of course.
We don't have any other situation?
No. It has one more situation it has. It when the mim sakin as well approaches the letter ba. Okay? Mim sakin approaches ba. Instead of nun sakin, mim sakin.
Also we produce a meme sound. All right.
For example, we have minkum bina. For example, minkum bina. Okay, mim sakin plus ba is there, okay? As well, we apply the same rule.
Uh-huh.
Half meme sound or a hidden meme sound.
Yes. Okay?
With gunna. Remember with gunna.
Yeah.
With gunna, okay? Inshallah, we'll go through the examples here.
Inshallah. How to learn Quran easy? What is the correct way to read the Quran? What is the correct way to learn Arabic and understand the Quran? Be with Let's Recite the Quran.
So, less in Surah Al-Ghashiyah, I told you that in Ayah 22, لَسْتَ عَلَيْهِمْ بِمُسَيْطِرْ, there is an iqlab example that I will tell you, okay? Now, go to this surah. لَسْتَ عَلَيْهِمْ بِمُسَيْطِرْ, Ayah 22.
Yes.
The second last line. So, لَسْتَ عَلَيْهِمْ بِمُسَيْطِرْ, the answer for Ali Nasir's question. عَلَيْهِمْ ends with?
Mim Sakin.
Ends with Mim. Mim Sakin. After Mim Sakin?
Ba.
Ba. We apply the rule. Iqlab here as well. How do you recite this ayah? لَسْتَ عَلَيْهِمْ بِمُسَيْطِرْ. With Gunna and also a hidden Mim. لَسْتَ عَلَيْهِمْ بِمُسَيْطِرْ. No. عَلَيْهِمْ بِمُسَيْطِرْ. Do not quickly go to the next word, okay? Just apply the rule غُنَّ as well, okay? And also a hidden meme. لَسْتَ عَلَيْهِمْ بِمُسَيْطِرْ. هِمْ بِمُسَيْطِرْ. Okay? That's easy.
Yes.
So whenever you see Mim Sakin plus Ba, apply the rule. Whenever you see Nun Sakin or Tanwin plus Ba, apply the rule. Thanks for the question. Thanks for the answer. Okay. Next example. Min ba'di.
Min ba'di.
Okay, who can apply the rule here in this example?
Me.
Hussein Ruhullah.
Min ba'di.
Ahsant. Min ba'di. Min ba'di. Noon is as well, noon sound is as well there, meme sound as well. Mixed. A combination of meme sound and noon sound, yes?
Yes.
It's just called like ikhlab. Min ba'di with gunna. Min ba'di ma ja'atuhum al-bayyin. Okay. Next example. Ali Nasir. Fa'anbatna.
Fa'anbatna.
Fa'anbatna. Okay. Fa'anbatna. MashaAllah. Hussein Musa. This example. Kiramin barara. Kiramin barara. Tanwin min ba. Kiramin barara. How do you say this? Kiramin barara.
Kiramin barara.
Ahsan. Kiramin barara. But like stretch the sound. Okay, for two counts. Kiramin barara.
Kiramin barara.
Ahsan. MashaAllah. So one more thing I have to tell you. This is important, okay? And it makes it very easy for you to understand the rule iqlab and the examples, okay? If you see the Quran, at the beginning of the Tanween and Nun Sakin rules, okay, I told you that the examples are written in a very kind of specific way. For example, for the rule Idgham, if we are supposed to apply the rule Idgham, okay, the Tanween is written in a special way. Yes? And also for Idhar, the Tanween is written in a special way. And also for Iqlab as well, the same. So for Iqlab, the examples are like this. Whenever you see on the top of Nun Sakin or on the top of Tanween, okay, you see a Fatha with a tiny or baby meme, a Kasra with a tiny or baby meme, a Dhamma with a tiny or baby meme, okay, you see this. Or a Nun Sakin with a meme, small meme on the top, okay?
It is Iqlab.
You should understand that this is the example of Iqlab. This is the example of
Iqlab.
Okay, so let me tell you some examples. Okay, guys, go to Surah Abbas. Okay, the examples are there. We can take a look at them. The rule Idgham as well, Idhar as well, Ikhfa as well, Iqlab as well. Inshallah, we'll practice Surah Abbas and apply the rules. Okay, take a look at Ayah 16 of Surah Abbas. If our brothers are searching for Surah Abbas, it's chapter 30, page 585. And Surah Abbas, okay? Abasa wa tawalla, it starts with. Ayah 16, kiramin barara. Take a look at that word, كرام برارة. So there is a tiny meme, right?
Yes.
Yes.
A tiny meme. So كرام برارة. Make sure, okay, that this meme is written this with this way and this way, okay? كرام. A usual meme, okay? A normal meme,
yes.
Okay? But there is also another meme which is written this way.
Yes.
Okay, the tail is just stretched, okay, to the left side. That meme, okay, that's not the sign of إقلاء. That is the sign of... That's the sign of...
Meme is working.
No. That's the sign of stop. Okay, you have to stop. There is a must.
Uh-huh.
Okay? That meme, this way. It's written this way.
Yes.
A tail, the tail of the meme, okay? It's stretched to the left side. But this meme, straight down, okay? This is the sign of إقلاب. But the other meme is the sign of
stop.
Stop.
Sir, I don't okay? have meme.
كرامين برارة. Okay, كرامين برارة. If you take a look, Usman Taha, if this is a version, okay, this Quran, okay? كرامين برارة. If you take a look, كرامين meme we have. And also, if this meme, كرامين, the meme, not the club sign, okay? If this meme, the word كرامين that ends with meme, if this sign, this meme, it is written in a very small font, okay, on the top of the words, okay, this is the sign of stop, okay? Uh-huh. This meme, this style of meme, okay, this font. But that tiny meme, baby meme, down that meme, okay, that is the sign of إقلاب, كسرة with meme. That's the sign of إقلاب, okay?
إقلاب.
It means you have to apply the rule إقلاب here. So how do you apply the rule? Read the word, the ayah. Who can read? Sayyid Ruhullah.
كرام برارة.
أحسن. كرام برارة. كرام برارة. Okay. Inshallah, the next session we'll go through the next rules. Okay. We will have a quick review of these four rules again. Okay. And we'll recite some ayahs. Then we'll go to the next rules of tajweed. See you, inshallah, in the next session. Is there anything else to say?
No.
Fawad?
Thanks to the students and the teacher.
Yeah.
Mostly students.
Okay. Okay. Especially and most especially, okay, Fawad Haider. So, Sayyid Musa, nothing to say? Okay. How about Al Nasir? Anything? Okay. See you, inshallah, in the next session. Stay with us. Walhamdulillahi Rabbil Alameen. Wa sallallahu ala Muhammadi wa alihi al-tahirin.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad wa ajil farajam.
Let's recite the Quran, a joint production of IRIB English Radio and Xavier International Schools.
ذكر وموعظة ونور فيه شفاء للصدور وشفيعنا يوم النشور آياته تروي المدى وصفاته نبع الهدى نرقى الجنان بحبه لن تستقيم حياتنا إلا به هو القرآن والفرقان إليه تنصت الأكوان وفيه تعطر الآذان والقرآن.
IRIB English Radio.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up,